Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Super Bowl weekend and Party Friday.
Party Friday, yeah.
Okay. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, just straight up.
That's right.
Brought to you by...
That Party Friday show is always brought to you by Mountain West Wellness Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, HappyTrees.co, and Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Got a lot of stuff going on right now. So there to go, Leo. Party Friday. Representative Stephanie Luck is going to be joining us here in a second. She's at the legislature now, so sometimes their schedule gets kind of goofed up. But yeah, we're giving a holler. Oh, we've got it with us right now. But
right
at 3:30, we also have a great guest coming up, Professor Michael Rechtenwald, who kind of takes apart a fascinating article
he had
on the World Economic Forum, essentially unraveling it. And I read it, and I'm like, you know, if you thought it was evil, it's even more evil. And he'll explain all that.
Yeah, but now we've got Stephanie Luck with us, a representative. One of the, I'd say maybe seven conservative left in the legislature, and that's probably being generous. So it's great to have her with us. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good. We're good. So, Stephanie, I understand you have several bills coming up next week, and I think maybe a couple of things. One, I'd like to talk to you about those bills, and there's some other bills I want to talk to you about, too, some awful things the Democrats appear to be trying to do, but also to let folks know if they want to come testify in favor of your bills, how we can do that. So let's maybe start off with, well, not you. Which are some of the ones that you want to talk about?
Well, I do have... personally, one bill that is up in committee next Friday, it is a life bill. There are two other life bills that will be heard on that same day in the same committee. So if your listeners are interested in the life issue, that will be a day to make it up to Denver or to remotely testify, which is an option now as well. And then there's also a bill on Monday that Representative Brad Green, and it is a bill to protect women's sports. For women.
Okay, that's why you do that one first, just briefly. So is this, how does it propose to do that?
The bill is pretty straightforward. And I should say, actually, she is also joined by Rep. Frizzell, Lisa Frizzell, okay, as a co-prime sponsor. The two of them are presenting to committee the idea that K through 12 schools, as well as intercollegiate entities, would need to have a sports team for biological women, a sports team for biological men, and then have the option of a co-ed team as well. But those are the three categories. And it's pretty straightforward. It preserves what many of us have understood about sports for at least a couple of decades, and is in response to what we're seeing across the country, wherein biological men are participating in biological female sports, and thereby just by virtue of their physical composition, often winning and defeating those who are biologically women. And
right,
so it's a fairness question, it's a justice question. And so hopefully they will be able to persuade folks of the importance of preserving Title IX and the intention behind it and the fight that has taken place over the last 100 years for women to have access to this type of opportunity.
Okay.
So as a practical matter,
we're not going to hold our breath that the Dems will.
I mean, not only the Dems increased all their majorities after the last election, but the Republicans we've elected are
except for people like you,
and some others, pretty liberal. I know here in Adams County, we've got Gabe Evans, and he's our new Kevin Priola. He's about as left wing as a Republican can get, but. So, but I guess you got to put out the good fight, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, girl can always hope. Hope springs eternal in all instances.
Talk to us about your life, Bills, because one of the things, and I'm hoping maybe that this is part of the strategy here too, one of the things that the Republicans really did do well last year, even though they were not able to prevail, but you guys were able to hold lengthy, like record-setting hearings to get some attention to some of these life issues. So first, maybe talk about the bills that you're proposing, and then is that something that you are hoping to do this time around too?
So the bill that I'm proposing is a bill that would require abortionists to administer a painkiller or sedative to an unborn child before the abortion procedure. The thought behind this bill, as horrendous as it is that if Colorado is going to legalize homicide of an entire class of people, the very least it can do as a state is make that practice humane to some degree. It's barbaric what we are doing to these unborn children, whether that is ripping them limb from limb through dissection abortions or burning them from the inside out, poisoning them with a poison that takes between 4 and 48 hours to kill them, at which time they're in excruciating pain and writhing, kicking. Their mothers report very severe kicking for hours on end. The very least we can do is relieve as much suffering as possible if we're going to continue to legalize homicide. Now, obviously, I don't want us as a state to legalize homicide. I want us to end that practice. But if we can diminish the suffering and humanize the child, right, make folks aware that the child is a person and does experience pain, then perhaps some of our conversations on this topic will shift. I know that there's a doctor that I've been working with too. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say here's the abhorrent thing about the whole thing. So we all know that babies, do feel right. I mean, particularly
nerves, everything else. Okay,
particularly in Colorado, where you could, have an abortion up to the time of birth. That baby, as soon as it's born, everyone knows that it feels pain.
It feels pain before
that. The fact that and they give the mother sedatives or something, painkillers. The fact that the Democrats, for the sake of not allowing us to say, that this is a person, right, would agree to have this child suffer just for their stupid and arrogant and evil philosophical, position, to me, that's abhorrent. That they would say, we don't want to admit that the baby is alive or that the baby is a baby or that it's a human and feels pain. Therefore, we're going to allow it to suffer. And Stephanie, I think that's an excellent bill.
That should be an interesting debate.
Yeah. I want to see them argue why the baby should suffer. I mean, has this gone on in other states?
It has actually gone on in other states. And it's my understanding that Utah adopted this law a number of years ago. And so we'll have an interesting conversation around this. I have a woman who has become a dear friend of mine who is a prior abortionist. And when this bill was proposed in the state where she was performing abortion, she was the head of an OBGYN group that did lobbying activities or would testify on bills like this. And so it crossed her desk, and she actually said she had a pause in her heart and was fearful, saying, oh no, like, I never considered that the child would feel pain. What have I been doing? Now, unfortunately, at that time, the science wasn't as clear, and there were a number of studies that she found that suggested, well, maybe they don't actually feel pain. But that was over a decade ago, I think almost 2 decades, actually. And so the science has very well substantiated the idea that these children feel pain. And so hopefully, we'll have others come to the same realization that she had started to come to about the humanity of the unborn.
Well, and again, and considering particularly in Colorado, where, we allow the late term abortions, and by that, I mean, up to the time of birth, right? That to try to say that child
should suffer,
that child doesn't feel pain. It's ludicrous. We all know the child feels, you can see it, right? I mean, of course the child feels pain. And I was didn't even occur to me that they didn't do this, right? I mean, I think that's a great bill, Steph, because I bet most people would assume that they do something, right, to help the child, whether you agree with abortion or don't agree with abortion. I don't think anyone thinks that there should be suffering, physical pain.
Oh, Democrats do.
Well, yeah,
they do. They like to inflict pain.
Yeah.
And I will say, so I was pro-choice for a number of years, for most all of my life, actually. And it was through conversations like this where people presented probing questions that I didn't have answers to, that caused a shift in my thinking. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that this conversation will alter hearts and minds. You mentioned the 1279 debate from last year. That was the bill that legalized or codified abortion in Colorado. And during those debates, we lasted in the House for 24 hours. It was actually a 26-hour day for us, but the debate itself was 24 hours. It was historic. As far as I understand, there's no other debate that has ever been recorded to have gone so long. And some people characterized it as a filibuster. And I think filibusters are about wasting time.
Right.
And our intention in doing that debate wasn't to waste time. It was to put forth a compelling argument, a compelling case for why this was bad policy. And we really could have gone 2 or 3 or 10 more days on laying out even just the cursory case for why this is a horrendous policy. And it's interesting because it didn't result in any changed votes. You know, the party, it was party line. But I will tell you that there were conversations that were had off of the mic, on the floor, you know, behind closed doors, so to speak, at our desks, wherein people were grappling with ideas and points and issues that they had never considered before. I remember one colleague saying, you know, I never got it. I never understood why you guys were against abortion. And now I start to see why you're against it. I may not agree with your analysis. I may not agree with the points you're making, but at least now I understand that you have something to stand on. That's huge. That's huge in a building where you have people who have been elected, many of them on this topic. This is one of the main things that get Democrats elected. And so for them to start to waver, even slightly, even to show a little crack in the armor to say, you know what, you're presenting ideas we had never thought of before, is huge. And so I think that these conversations are essential to keeping that conversation going. And not just for us, but for your audience and for the general public. Many people who don't really give deep thought to this issue. Yeah. And I think that as more and more do, then their hearts are changed on the topic.
I have to give you a little pushback on one thing you said. Every day that is wasted down at the Colorado legislature with the present progressives in charge, it's a good day for the people of Colorado. Waste more and more time, waste the old session. If you didn't have a session at all, it'd be a victory for the people.
Understood. I wasn't trying to imply otherwise, just saying that we weren't filibustering. We weren't trying to waste time.
We're just let me ask you this on that note though, because those are great bills and please keep us posted. I mean, I'm sure the Democrats will kill them, but like you said, it never occurred to me that they didn't administer some sort of pain stopping thing. But some of the things I was reading
just on that point, really quick on that point, when they're trying to save the child, they do. In many instances.
Oh, when they're brilliant, they don't. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and at the same whatever
time
in the pregnancy, right? So,
yes, that's right.
It's just crazy. Well, what about, I want to ask a couple of other bills that I saw.
Donna's asking, what's the bill number and the legislator's name? The legislator's name is Stephanie Luck, and the bill number is what, Stephanie?
Oh, you know what? I don't actually know off the top of my hand, but I can look real quick.
Okay. I know you have you have so many. Well, while you do that, let me ask you about this, because I was reading a couple other things and I think the Democrats are just going to go unhinged this session. So I was reading where they're putting forth bills that would never, and their whole new, you know, great reset green agenda trying to destroy our lives. Number one, we're going to have to get rid of leaf blowers here in the next couple of years and lawnmowers, because those are bad. And they are actually going to go ahead and try to ban gas fireplaces and things like that. Do you have any information or hear any rumblings about some of those ridiculous bills?
I'm pretty sure most of those bills all passed last session. if I remember correctly. I may, you know.
No, I think there were some new ones
like,
coming up.
What about this bill? Okay. I know that last year that was on the docket. Last year, the General Assembly looked at and voted on 657 bills, the 717 pieces of business. And so it's hard to keep track, but I do know that there were conversations about those ideas last year. And so I suspect that if they didn't pass last year, and they're bringing them back this year, then they're hopeful that they will pass this year.
Right. Well, because it's not an election year, right? So they don't have to. Well, yeah.
I don't have to worry about election years either. Your ballot harvest, you don't have to worry about anything.
Right. Well, and it's some of those, the Green New Deal things. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, Bill Gates flying around in his private jet probably generates more whatever pollution than 100 million, maybe not 100 million, but all the leaf blowers in Colorado, right? I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
He's working hard for all of us.
Well, you know, I saw another one too. They're going to try the safe injection sites. It's not safe injection sites. It's heroin injection sites. I think they're going to push for that again, right? To allow cities to do it. What other kinds of things?
Well, I kind of wonder about that because they're a little behind the times. You know, nobody's shooting up these days. They're smoking up the fentanyl.
Yeah.
You know, heroin's too expensive. So these safe injection sites will have nobody there because what they're really trying to do is smoke up the fentanyl. So they've got to get with the times.
Well,
Democrats.
Actually, Chuck, fentanyl is on its way out. There are now two new drugs, both of which I can't pronounce, that have actually entered the scene and are the thing to do. So even you are behind the times. The drug market.
I can't stand being behind the
so
times.
So quickly changing.
No, I'll have to talk to my druggy friends and say, why haven't you kept me apprised of all the ones that are even worse for you and will kill you quicker? And in some ways, you kind of go, that's not a bad deal.
But what other kinds of things? I mean, you guys have just such a fight, Stephanie, and you know, and thank you for doing it. Sometimes I got to think, how do you get up?
Get up in the morning.
Yeah, get up in the morning. I'll go introduce some bill. I'll get beat up, punched, and slapped around by the Democrats. But what kinds of other things are you fighting for or fighting to try to stop that's going on this session?
So you know, my fight is on really good governance, life, liberty, and justice, those narratives, and helping people understand true definitions of those things. We throw those words around a lot, but we don't really define them. And so to try and help folks to better understand, what does good governance look like? Does good governance look like passing or reviewing 657 bills in roughly 84 days? I don't think so. I don't think that that is good governance. And so just generally speaking, the process that we use is flawed, is broken, and we need correction on that. That's a bill that I'm going to be putting forward later this session on how we can restructure the General Assembly so as to allow for greater transparency and better governance. In terms of life, you know, there are life issues we're going to be seeing. Not only our bills, which advance life and protect life and speak to the culture that every life is valuable inherently. So you don't have to be someone or have a title or accomplish something in order to matter. You just matter because you exist. Unfortunately, there'll be other bills this session that give the alternate message and that allow for greater access to things like abortion and without, you know, the costs associated with it. We also have, you know, we need to reclaim the idea of liberty. There are a lot of good ideas out there about how to solve problems that our communities are facing, but not all of those ideas need to be implemented in state statute. Not all of those ideas are for the government to embrace. There are different entities in our culture, in our society, that can embrace them and implement them. So we just saw the farm workers bill come through at the Ag Committee, and I voted no on that bill. That bill says that basically farmers have the right to certain information from the manufacturers who manufacture their equipment, their big farm equipment. And I understand that this has been a problem over the years. And many farmers say, hey, I bought this $100,000 or $200,000 tractor and I can't get it fixed because I can't have access to certain codes since more and more of our equipment is electronic based, computer based instead of mechanically based. And so I understand that there's a real problem. And interestingly, though, the Farm Bureau has entered into a contract, an MOU, really, with John Deere to provide almost everything that this bill contemplates. And they've already started to provide it. And that's a private contractual arrangement that is much more flexible, much more fluid than state statute. And so the private entities are already solving this problem. Let's release them and encourage them to continue down that road instead of inserting ourselves and saying, here's a one-size-fits-all solution that doesn't really fit anything because we feel like we have to do something. And so examining what we mean by liberty as a society and, you know, hopefully giving a renaissance to our founders' idea of liberty and implementing that, which is limited government and then the ability of people to recognize that the government isn't your savior. You need to go out and you need to solve your own problems.
I hope you're not feeling too lonely down there. because I'm afraid there's so few in the legislature who would agree with those wonderful ideas, but you're there.
But and let me ask you about then, it's a Senate bill, I know, but Senate Bill 101, the one that would get rid of, essentially destroy caucuses, get rid of the assembly process. Bizarrely, right, by some traitor Republicans. What is your sense on that? I mean, we have been trying to kind of puzzle out, have they hooked up with the Democrats? Are the Democrats for it? Are the Democrats going to kill it? Or what's their ultimate motive? I mean, what can you shed any light on where that's going down at the legislature?
So I would say that a number of Democrats are in opposition to that bill because they love caucus. And I think, you know, all of us should love caucus and the Republican ideal that it displays. So it will be an interesting committee hearing. It will be an interesting conversation. I'm hopeful it will die, honestly. We'll see. We'll definitely, if it gets to the House floor, there will definitely be a fight over it.
Okay, good.
Well, that'd be interesting. I guess, was it Bradford, who's the Republican sponsor?
And Kirkmeyer.
Kirkmeyer. And good old Kirkmeyer, up there in Adams County. So, thanks, Barb. We're glad you... Too bad you didn't your congressional seats. You're down to the legislature and on the JBC and elsewhere, destroying us. So, it's always love, Barb Kirkmeyer.
What's your sense, Stephanie, of in terms of the, I mean, this is sort of more of a general question, but you know, there's been at least a little bit of hope that the Democrats maybe stop from going overly crazy because Jared Polis, I think, wants to be president someday and maybe trying to rein him in. What's your sense of how Polis is getting along with the Democrats in the legislature? How is that working out? Or do you have any sense of that? Do they not call you for the meeting?
So there's a lot of scuttlebutt to substantiate what you're saying, but scuttlebutt is gossip. So who knows? Really, except for those people who are engaged in those conversations. What I will say is that some of the gun bills that I was aware of, one in particular, not the assault weapons ban, but another one that I was aware was supposed to drop the first week of session, has yet to drop. And I suspect it has yet to drop because there are still ongoing negotiations around the policy, because Governor Polis doesn't want to come out in opposition to his party. He doesn't want to be constantly using his veto pen. And yet he is walking a fine line. You know, he campaigns so often as this libertarian, really, you know, more on the conservative side. And so if he wants to be the moderate candidate in 2024 for the presidency, he's going to need to stymie some of the more progressive elements of the legislature. So we'll see what happens and how some of those conversations go. But I do know that there are a few conversations behind the scenes on some pretty critical issues wherein he's saying, you know what, I can't support this. You need to find another way forward.
We'll see that.
Well, thank you so much for...
Let me ask one more time. So if people want to come testify for your bills, how would they... Can you maybe... I don't know if you're able to get the bill number. If not, we can figure it out later. But how can they find out? Where do they go? All of that information.
Good question.
Wonderful. So my bill is HB 23-1097. That's the painkiller abortion bill. That will be heard with the other two life bills on Friday in the Health and Insurance Committee, in the House Health and Insurance Committee upon adjournment. So it could be in the morning or it could be in the afternoon.
If
you
want
to come up to the Capitol next Friday, the 17th. Okay. If people want to come up to the Capitol, they can do so and they'll be directed to the proper location. However, they don't have to anymore. We now have remote testimony. So if you go to the General Assembly's website, you go to the committees tab, there's a remote or a testimony page there to walk you through how you can sign up to testify. And perhaps, you know, you're just going to be out of pocket entirely that day, but you still want your voice heard. You can submit written testimony that gets added into the record, which is also helpful. Even if many of my colleagues aren't able to read those informations, it does build the record and helps us to say, hey, the people of Colorado aren't position the way you think they are, because so often we're told the people of Colorado want these egregious, outlandish, extreme abortion bills and policies. And we saw in the 1279 abortion debate that right. there were, you know, people came 6-1 or 7-1 to testify against that bill. And the more that we can demonstrate that the people of Colorado really aren't behind this policy, the better off that my remarks are.
Okay, perfect. Okay. All right. Well, Stephanie, Representative Stephanie Luck, thank you so much.
Are you going to be down at the State Central Committee meeting in March?
Yes, I will be in attendance.
All right. We'll see you down
there.
We'll see you
there. All right, Stephanie, thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you for fighting the fight and getting up and doing it every day.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Here we go. Representative Stephanie Luck had a bunch of comments. We've got a few minutes before we call Dr.
Let's do our Super Bowl ad.
Wait, that's okay. I thought Polis EO was in. Never. Okay, you guys are having your own conversation over there too. Sandra says thank you. She's great. Yes, she. And then Dr. Donna says on Friday, assume the morning. That's correct, Dr. Donna. I think a lot of them like to go ahead and get out of here. Get out of there on time. Well, yeah, we got a couple minutes before. Wanted to play. It's Party Friday, so we're not going to end. We're going to talk to Dr. Michael Reckenfield of the World Economic Forum. I mean, he's just great. But in the meantime, though, I did pull one of the Super Bowl ads. For people who are listening to the podcast and not seeing it, everybody's naked. Okay, just envision everybody being naked in the ad. It's pretty funny. But Thomas, if we could go ahead and play this is for Avocados from Mexico, the Super Bowl ad, please.
Eve, what's going on?
I might have taken a small bite. Adam.
Naked. Hey, try this. Avocados from Mexico. They make everything better.
Avocados from Mexico.
Well, it's another perfect day in the big avocado. Traffic is smooth, as always.
Yo, I love you.
No, I love you.
And in fashion news, naked continues to be all the rage.
It's an avocado.
But it's also a phone.
You're right. Avocados from Mexico make everything better.
Sweet liberty.
Now that's a tourist attraction.
What was interesting in looking through the Super Bowl ads, it's pretty clear that people are that they get the message that people do not want politics and they don't want.
Oh, I'm
there's
sure
no
they do.
Cryptocurrency ads. It's all.
Oh no, FBI. Be there.
They aren't doing anything like that.
Interview him instead of, because Biden won't do an interview, apparently. They ought to get Sam Bankman-Fried. He's out.
He's going to do some interview. I don't know. With like I don't know. He's doing some kind of thing they're showing. But anyway, so I think hopefully we'll be free of horrible woke messaging, except for what God knows what Beyonce will do.
Or what the NFL will do with their Enzo. I mean, you know.
Yeah. But some of the commercials, they were kind of going back to, there was another one. You know, the John Travolta song, Tell Me More, Tell Me More. It's an AT&T one, and John Travolta's in it. So they have
Pfizer advertising. There, right.
Yeah, Pfizer. There's,
we'll kill you and your entire family.
Right. Take a get before we get the booster.
Get the booster.
Hey, and Thomas, if you want to go ahead and call Dr. Reckenwald right now, we can go ahead and kind of do that too. And then Leo says, everybody on Zoom here being naked would take a lot more than avocado toast to erase the memory. No offense. Anyway, that's true. Yeah, we do not want naked people on Zoom. We don't want any CNN, you know, tuber. What was Jeffrey Toobin?
Having fun.
Yeah. So Dr. Reckenfeld, when we get him, he I want to ask him about this when he gets here, but you know, the World Economic Forum, you tend to think, no, I mean, you kind of feel like QAnon or something like that, right? When you look at what they're doing. And then when you actually see what they're doing, it's like worse. I mean, I was trying to have this discussion the other day with somebody. They're like, no, Julie, you're crazy. I'm like, no, seriously.
No, I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. They support this. And it's just like astonishing. So we have him with us now, Dr. Michael Reckenwald, Professor Reckenwald, PhD, formerly Professor of Liberal Studies and Global Studies at NYU. He's an author, got a great book explaining the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset, and has a great article, which is what I first read, Mastering the Future, the megalomaniacal ambitions of the World Economic Forum. Hey, Dr.
It's great to have you on. I didn't think we were going to have an NYU professor that had taught liberalism on, but your students must have been shocked when you told them what liberalism really was.
Time this Friday.
Yeah, so I mean, I left NYU because the woke mob basically drove me out. But I'm now at Hillsdale College as a distinguished scholar, but the Great Reset is something that the minions at NYU would not really understand or understand the dangers of.
Well, let's talk about it, because like I said, you know, before we got you on, I was saying a lot of times, you know, people look at you like all your conspiracy theorists, except all of conspiracy theories are coming true anymore. But talk about the dangers of the World Economic Forum and this whole Great Reset, because I think a lot of people just
don't appreciate it.
Don't get it.
Well, I mean, they are aiming to control the entire world economic system. And the world social and political systems as well. And they're doing it in a very surreptitious fashion by ushering in what they're calling stakeholder capitalism, which is a backdoor way that basically circumvents legislation. And instead of worrying about passing legislation, which they also intend to have passed, they're doing it by resetting the economy vis-a-vis corporations themselves, and they're very successful in doing this. They have the world's largest corporations signed on to this platform of stakeholder capitalism, and they're resetting the economy in terms of the environmental and social and governance index on the stock market. And this is being foisted on us by the world's largest asset managers and banks, and is being conveyed by the world's largest corporations, which are all partners with the World Economic Forum. And the agenda that the Great Reset brings about is Agenda 2030 of the UN, the UN's Agenda 2030 right. Sustainable right. Development Goals,
right,
which is just a really doublespeak for what they have in mind, which is about, you know, really controlling the economy and controlling our behavior. They have a great deal of behavioral control involved, and they are trying to basically limit what we can consume, limit what can be produced, limit the use of fossil fuels, if not eliminate them entirely, and so on and so forth.
Well, let me back you up 1 second. And can you go ahead and define stakeholder capitalism? Because I think this is an important.
Sounds nice.
It sounds like, I like capitalism.
And stakeholder, yeah, the stakeholder should have something.
Should
yeah.
have a say. So can you explain why this is not so nice?
Yes. I mean, so they use this term stakeholder capitalism to suggest that all stakeholders, you know, should have a part in what corporations or companies do. But it turns out that this isn't the people that are stakeholders are not the majority or any people that, you know, would really benefit or stand to lose from some sort of corporate behavior. This really has to do with bringing on the kinds of corporations who will abide by the dictates of the UN and the World Economic Forum and leave the rest behind. So stakeholder capitalism is a kind of, it's a cartel scheme, really, that is about eliminating certain producers from the economy entirely and directing all the capital towards the compliant and complicit corporations so that the others just wither on the vine. This is the kind of control that I'm talking about. This stakeholder capitalism, I've defined it as corporate socialism, as neo-feudalism, as economic fascism. It's all of these things at the same time.
What about, I mean, talk a little bit about the food situation, because I thought in your column or your article, I was like,
poor Belgian farmers.
Right. I mean, you know, we've been seeing farmers in Europe protesting as the government saying, some 3,000, farmers are going to have to lose their farms. They're like, oh, well, just too bad, so sad. Explain, and it's basically, am I right here, that the idea is to just allow a few massive corporations
Conagra.
To control all of the food and the food supply and all of that, and then they'll start deciding who gets what food and who pays what prices. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So they're implementing these sustainable farming goals. So they want to eliminate nitrates from fertilizer, and they want to eliminate cattle to an extent so they are less prone to emit so-called greenhouse gases like methane and ammonia. So what they're doing in the Netherlands, for example, is the government actually is buying up farms. And it's not giving them the farmers a choice as to whether they sell. They're buying them under feedlot conditions. They this is mandated sale. It's eminent domain, as it were.
Okay.
And then they are taking these farms out of commission because they believe that the Netherlands is producing too many greenhouse gases.
So this will
cut agricultural output to a great extent. It'll also cut all food supplies. This is the second largest exporter of food in the world behind the United States. So this will have dramatic impact on the food conditions of many people, leaving many people who are already insecure in terms of food, hungry, and even could lead to famines if this rolls out any further.
Are they at all set back at all when they – the Sri Lankan government decided to adopt their program and it ended up with riots and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that could come about. So, yeah, Sri Lanka adopted the same sustainable farming practices, so-called. And as such, they eliminated all nitrate fertilizers.
Yeah.
And likewise, food production was dramatically reduced, leaving prices to rise dramatically, causing food shortages and so forth. So it led to a total disaster. And this was, I think, a dry run to see how this would work across the world. And other countries are adopting these same kind of policies. Canada right now is aiming to reduce nitrates by 30%, which again will lead to food insecurity. And this is just what they have on the agenda. They want to get rid of so-called greenhouse gases at any cost, including the cost of lives, the cost of food insecurity, and, in fact, the livelihoods of farmers across the world.
When the left adopts a word it likes, it just kind of uses it time and time again. I've been involved in cities and city planning and sustainability. We have to have sustained growth. Which just meant massive apartment houses, no green space, everything else. And that was called sustainable growth. So that's sustainable, you see. And then they said that con job went over so well. They said, let's use that for the food one. It's sustainable food, sustainable farming. Yeah, it can mean whatever we want it to mean. It's a nice, it's like gender-affirming care. I mean, okay, child genital mutilation,
right.
Gender-affirming care. I mean, just they got some great wordsmiths over at on the Marxist side of things.
Oh yes, they do, and they use doublespeak and euphemisms all the time. It's really one of the hardest tasks of writing this book was penetrating the jargon to see what these words really mean. As it turns out, sustainability is connected to population control. And it's connected to reduction in consumption and production. That's what they mean by sustainable. So they want to cut production and consumption, especially in the developed world. And they're trying to thwart the development in the developing world. So they're bribing them through cash transfers, wealth transfers to the developing world so that they don't develop. They do not want development.
What?
Population control is part of this.
Do we know what the budget of the World Economic Forum is?
Does it? Yeah.
Well, we know that they get their money from corporations. They have 1,000 corporate partners. These are the world's largest corporations and the most successful in their various industries. And they're also given money from the United Nations, the United States, USAID. The U.S. Association for International Aid. And this is coming straight out of the taxpayers' pocket.
Oh, great.
One of the stories I read was the Alberta province, Canada, went back and said, no, we're not going to follow the COVID mandates of the central government. Here in Alberta, you don't need to have a vaccination card and some other things. And then they found their health department was enforcing vaccine cards and other things. And they said, what are you doing? And the health department said, oh, we have our own contract with the World Economic Forum. And they told us to do this. That didn't go over real well with the Alberta government, but it's amazing that the World Economic Forum is dealing with health departments in Alberta, Canada on a direct basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Klaus Schwab, the chairman and founder of the World Economic Forum, has boasted about penetrating local governments, state governments, federal governments across the world and getting his people in place. And we have contracts in the United States with the World Economic Forum as well. This is not very well known, but there is legislation that's been proposed in the last session to defund Davos. It's the defund Davos bill. And I hope the current Congress takes this up and passes it.
What about going back to the food thing? Because I think that's something that people can get their head around. I don't for a second believe that they actually are so worried about carbon emissions and nitrates and things like that, that they're like, well, people just have to starve. What is behind it all? Is it the population control? I mean, you know, you hear weird things about Bill Gates, who now owns all of the farm in the United States. What are they really trying to do, do you think?
Well, that's a great question, Julie. So in the last meeting of the World Economic Forum, they called the meeting Cooperation in a Fragmented World. So fragmentation, so-called, is what really threatens the global agenda.
Yeah.
So what they're looking to do is consolidate wealth in the control, in the hands of those they deem worthy of controlling it. And so this is a vast consolidation scheme. It is a monopoly scheme. It is the whole woke capitalism. All of this is a monopoly scheme to drive all the production and all the wealth into the hands of the few favored corporations and producers and out of the hands of others. So really, when it comes down to it, it's wealth consolidation.
Okay. Well, what about
that's
that?
Another wait, nice wait, word. No, it's another okay. nice word. Fragmentation. That sounds awful, right? You don't want to be fragmented.
Yeah.
What a great word.
Ben, because I'm just suspicious about this. You know, the current food prices, grocery prices in the United States, right, have just like skyrocketed. Is part of that, and it's intentional, right? I mean, the Biden administration, obviously their policies are creating it. And is part of that, do you think, for them to have people say, well, my God, this is too expensive. And then the government can step in and say, we will control egg prices for you. I mean, does that, or am I being just crazy there?
No, I think this is a part of the agenda. They want to control, pricing, and they want to control distribution. They want to control just what we eat. And so what they're trying to do is drive up the prices of what they don't want us eating. That's why we'll see meat prices rising. We'll see egg prices rising. Basically, anything that is based on farming practices that they deem to be unsustainable.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a lot of that. And this is deliberate in order to change consumption patterns and likewise get rid of certain practices altogether.
Well, who's fighting the World Economic Forum?
How do we fight them?
Or if anybody is, besides yourself.
Well, I've laid out a 9-point plan for individuals and families to fight this on their own.
Okay.
You don't necessarily need a centralized opposition to the World Economic Forum. What we need is exactly what they despise, which is fragmentation or decentralization. We need to get their puppet strings off of our bodies and off of our minds. And I've laid out a plan for doing that. Basically, they're the puppeteers, and all we can do is cut the puppet strings from ourselves so that we aren't not controlled by their agenda. And so I have a 9-point plan for doing that. I don't think a centralized operation like that proposed by Jordan Peterson to oppose the World Economic Forum is the way to go about this, because what we don't need is more centralized control. We
right.
need decentralization.
Well, where can people see your 9-point?
Yeah, where can people, because I'm sure people will be like, I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all in my book, in the Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, Unraveling the Global Agenda. It lays out a 9-point plan at the end of the book called The Grand Refusal. And if nothing else, we will be a remnant who are left over for liberty, for individual rights, for individual self-determination, and the free market. And I believe
the
free market
again?
Is biblically ordained.
Wait, go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah,
we'll give
ahead.
You a chance to say the book at the end here. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, I mean, the free market is biblically ordained as the way that we're supposed to practice our economics, our economics in this world. And so we must remain a remnant of the free market that we can pass down to future generations.
Well, and you know, one of the scary things about it, the scariest thing I think about it is, like you said, these corporations have united and they're pushing their woke stuff, their ESG stuff. They force other corporations out. You look at what's going on with big tech, and none of them are elected and none of them can be unelected then, right? I mean, that's sort of the evil beauty of their scheme. It's, you know, they can't be held accountable, really.
There's one way we can hold them accountable, and that's through the marketplace.
Yes.
And that is to divest from their ESG abiding and complying companies, divest from the ESG abiding and complying banks, getting out of their technologies, which they aim to control us with, like central bank digital currencies and digital identity and on and on. So what we just have to do is refuse these things and divest from their scheme.
Okay. Well, final question.
Yeah, well, no, go ahead and tell us the book name again and where you can
get it.
Yes, it's The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, Unraveling the Global Agenda. And it's available where books are sold, like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but also directly from me on my website at michaelrechtenwald.com. You bypass the big digital tyrant and get a signed copy.
Let me just a final question before we let you go. Is there still time? I mean,
are we doomed?
Are we, you know, I mean, I'm assuming since you're putting out a plan, you think there are, but how close are we to maybe going over the point of no return, the tipping point?
That's a great question. So they're trying to close the circle of totalitarianism with the, you know, central bank digital currency and other technologies. But we, at the very least, we can resist this on our individual family level, community level, and survive into the future. So while their plans may be globally successful, we have the chance of evading what they're doing on a personal and individual level.
All right.
Well, great for coming on. Yeah. We really appreciate it. Very informative. I have to have you back.
Yes, sir. Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Take care.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead and spell his last name.
So, yeah, just so folks, because he has, if you Google him while they still let us Google things, his website comes up. It's Michael Rechtenwald, Rechtenwald. Yeah, and I really recommend, I mean, I went in there and I spent a ton of time on the reading it, and I was like, I didn't realize that.
No. All good news, right?
And Leo is like, since I have like $46 to my name, I'm sure me divesting will crush them.
Yeah,
yeah, really. So yeah, once again, Dr. Donna, it's RECTENWALD, Michael Rechtenwald. And there's a ton of stuff in his book. It just looks fascinating. And he explains it really well. Like I said, he was tying in the food thing and all of a sudden it hit me. I'm like, they don't want the food prices to go down. I mean, you know, they do stories about, oh yeah, inflation. That's why Biden lies. It's like, they want it to go up. They want to control things. They want us to get used to not eating eggs, which, and I think they don't care if people go hungry or if people starve or there are famines in other countries. You know, they don't care about that. Same with, like, you know, that's why they kind of push you. It seems like such a great idea to have free lunches for kids at school, right? Well, but then they have contracts, the people who provide the free lunches, and, you know, they aren't going to include meat or eggs.
I don't know if you saw the new one, but the Brookings Institute put out a list of the leading misinformation sites where you get misinformation. and we were hoping to make the list, but we didn't quite make it. The winner was Steve Bannon in the War Room. That won the misinformation award from Brookings Institute, which means it's telling you more truth than it is.
That becomes a thing. You know, I was talking with my daughter. She was like, how do you know? And I'm like, well, sometimes you can tell by, like you said, so if the Brookings Institute says it's a leading source of misinformation, good, then you know that it's actually the leading source of information, right? I mean, so sometimes but I said, yeah, you know, people, we kind of pay attention anymore. On Monday, we're going to have Dr. June Depp come on, and he's going to talk about the whole died suddenly, sort of from a medical point of view. He's like, you know, he said, I don't know what's causing all of these people to die suddenly. But he's like, you'd think that somebody with the least amount of medical curiosity would say, maybe we should look into this. Because there do seem to be some deficit. Yeah.
Pfizer will look into it. So, you know, you're all set.
Yeah,
and Pfizer. They'll publish the next its findings and next year's Grammys during the satanic dance rituals.
That's right.
And it'll be all set.
Actually, I can predict what they'll be. You're all fine. Anybody who's dropping dead, it's just weird coincidences and sad kind of things. But anyway, he's going to come on talking about died suddenly.
All right, everybody, have a great weekend, and hope your favorite team wins the Super Bowl. I hate the NFL, but I still enjoy football, so I'll be watching it. But it'll be I'm rooting for Kansas City, but who knows?
If, yeah, we could. It's just it's good.
Julie roots whoever wins.
I root for whoever's winning.
She waits and she cheers whoever's leading, and then goes over. And when it's over, I knew it the whole time, and that was my team.
That's right. Hey, thank you to everybody on Zoom. Catch all of our shows at chuckandjulie.com. Thank you to the great guys at BBS Radio, and we will see you all on Monday.
Take care, everybody.